East St. Louis. For years, it was a symbol of everything wrong with American cities. Houses were crumbling, poverty was rampant, and most commercial enterprises had given up on this old town along the Mississippi River. Then, in 1990, something remarkable happened. A few professors at the University of Illinois teamed up with a group of grassroots leaders to rebuild the city. Ever since, hundreds of college students have been traveling down to East St. Louis to work on various neighborhood projects. In return, they get college credit and some priceless lessons about life. Ken Reardon helped organize this project.
In 1956, East St. Louis was selected an All-American City by Look Magazine and the National Municipal League, a thriving industrial center, meatpacking, metal bending, aluminum production, pharmaceuticals, chemicals, everything looked good. Between 1960 and 1980, East St. Louis lost 75% of all of its businesses. 12,000 highly paid manufacturing jobs disappeared overnight, moved to the South and eventually overseas. With that, unemployment rate went from 6% to 29% by 1990. The poverty rate went from 12% to 42%. The city's budgetary situation just collapsed, with the tax base contracting from $600 million to $150 million. They developed a municipal debt of almost $100 million, so much so that they had to eliminate all public services except for police and fire. They even had to eliminate trash collection from 1986 to 1992, and they also had to turn off their municipal streetlights because they couldn't pay their utility bill.
That was the one that I think really just blew me away when I heard it, that the streetlights weren't on because they couldn't pay the electricity.
So driving from one end of the city to the other, there were hand-painted signs wired to the traffic signals, which were now turned off, dark because they couldn't pay the utility bill, telling people to proceed with caution. All the street signs were stolen for their salvage value. 1,000 manhole covers were stolen for their salvage value. So around one elementary school in the middle of a neighborhood that we began our work in 1990, there were approximately 135 manhole covers missing around an elementary school serving kindergarten through sixth grade. And think about our children navigating those kinds of treacherous urban conditions. It was just horrifying.
And you said there was no trash collection either. What did they do with the trash?
People burned it. People took it to work. People sent it to school with their children in knapsacks, anything they could to try to get rid of it. They were paying the highest property taxes in the state of Illinois, but they weren't getting any services because with the departure of corporations, the tax base just wasn't sufficient. What happened was a group of women, church women, in 1964 were sitting at home in a public housing complex in East St. Louis, and they were watching the Democratic convention in Atlantic City. And there they heard the powerful words of Fannie Lou Hamer from the Freedom Democratic Party trying to get access to that convention. And they decided, this group of 12 girlfriends, that they were going to work together to turn their community around.
And so when you went there, your first point of contact was this group of 12 women?
Yes, which we referred to as the Blue-Haired Brigade. They were led by this now quite elderly, Miss Ciola Davis, and she invited us into the community on the condition that we met five simple requirements. One, they would, the residents of the city, through their organization, choose the issues to be worked on, not us or our funders at the university. Two, that they would be happy to work with us as long as they would be involved as active participants in the research and planning process from Jump Street, as they said. Three, they were not interested in, and the exact words they used was, another one-night stand, university coming in because it's popular for a semester to do some good, and then to leave just at the point where they've probably identified problems and probably not even solutions, and then leave the community to deal with just another brick on the wall. Fourth, they wanted us to open up our development office so that as plans were developed, they would be able to access regional funding sources that we were able to access because of our fundraising arm. And lastly, they wanted us to help them create a permanent nonprofit organization that could continue the work after we left.
And the response of the university to these demands, which are a little unusual for an academic department to face?
Well, I went back to my dean and I told her there was good news and bad news. The good news was that there was a hellacious group of faith-filled women who were about ready to turn their city around, and they were inviting us to be partners. She was very excited about that. I said the bad news is that they're a hell of a lot more serious about this work than we appear to be. And then I laid on the table the 5 points, which we've come to refer to in the project as the Sciola Accords, named after Miss Davis. She smiled. She says, it looks like they've worked with universities before, and she signed her name on the bottom. And that's how it began.
Wow. What about the students that you took down there? This is not the kind of semester project that most of them were probably looking forward to.
Absolutely not. In September of 1990, we went down to East St. Louis. As we approached the town, we smelled the burning garbage. As we got into the town, we saw no streetlights. It was an evening meeting at a settlement house, a 100-year-old settlement house. We had a hard time finding it. Even finding 12th Street meant you had to go to City Hall and count off 12 blocks.
Because all of the street signs were gone.
All the street signs. And then navigating through streets were missing manhole covers. So the students were just petrified. One said to me, went on to become the director of our state housing agency in Illinois, "Gee, Ken, what the hell can we do in a place like this? Look, the conditions are so desperate." At that point, we arrived at the front door, and there was Sciola and her women friends, who greeted us with great smiles and put their arms around us and invited us into the basement of the church. And they described how they had taken 3 arson-damaged buildings down with their own hands, dismantling the buildings, recycling the copper from the pipes, the wiring from the building, the lathing from the inside structure, and then generated $3,000 with the materials, the bricks that were used by decorative historic preservation people. They then held chicken dinners for a year to make their $3,000 grow to 5. They then went to Ralston Purina and asked for a matching grant in order for them to build the first playground in their neighborhood in 30 years.
And this is all before your project got anywhere near East St. Louis.
So looking around the room and realizing that 75-year-old grandmothers and great aunts and a couple of older retired railroad workers had made this happen, and then they showed us the playground. And then they said, with this, we're now ready to rebuild the entire neighborhood, and we need your help.
This sounds terrific, and I'm sure that there is more terrific to be heard about it. It's a leap to imagine that people smiled and said, "Oh, you're here. Welcome. Come into my house." What did happen? They must have gotten some, "Who are you and what are you doing here?" reaction.
Well, the fact that we were brought to them under the sponsorship of the auspices of a group of 12 women who were absolutely revered in this community, that even if they had questions about us, they were willing to give us the benefit of the doubt because we were friends of Miss Davis. And the amazing thing, we've been in East St. Louis now for 10 years. We've knocked on every door in the house, in the community many times. We've been in every church several dozens of times probably in the 10 years. It's just the enormous welcome. And for our students, absolutely life-transforming for many of them. They come into the community believing that some communities succeed and some fail because of pure effort, the Protestant work ethic. And all of a sudden they meet very poor African-American men and women who have done the hardest, the dirtiest, the most difficult work in our society, home health aides, school, teachers' assistants. They've worked in factories. They've done deliveries. They've worked in fast food places their whole lives, full-time jobs plus a second job. But because of economic decisions completely outside of their control, they were left behind in the new economy while our students were advantaged and privileged because of where they grew up, a simple twist of fate, as Bob Dylan would say. And this had an enormous impact. And after visiting these individuals in their homes and seeing what they had done to try to maintain their properties and to rebuild their neighborhoods in the face of, you know, daunting economic forces, our students would get completely captured. They would go through walls, jump over tall curbs, knock down buildings. And you say, what have we done? We did the first plan. It won the Best Plan of the Year award by the American Institute of Certified Planners. We all got our pictures taken with the vice president, who had a little spelling problem, Dan Quayle. We came back to East St. Louis. 30 agencies told us they wouldn't fund even the smallest project in our award-winning plan.
You had the plan, but the city agencies wouldn't respond?
City agencies wouldn't respond. Corporations wouldn't. Foundations. They viewed East St. Louis as a terminal case of urban decline. Let's just wait until the dust settles. They couldn't see any...
Could you at least show them photographs of the park that the women had built, of other projects that you had by this time?
Well, we did. It wasn't powerful enough. So Miss Davis put her arms around me at the meeting and said, "What did you expect, honey, a check?" I said, "Yes, I'm a middle-class white guy from New York City who went to an Ivy League school. I did expect a check." And she says, "Well, we're just going to have to work with the resources at hand." I said, "But that's the point. We don't have any." She says, "Look around the room. There are 80 residents. There are 40 of your students. This Saturday, let's implement the first step in our plan, environmental enhancement, by cleaning up the 10 worst lots in our neighborhood. So we did that. We recruited 50 students. They recruited 100 residents. We went down on a Saturday. We cleaned up mountains of trash from 10 lots, but we had no place to put it. Miss Davis then smiled and said, "See that nice yellow line down the middle of the street? Let's pile the garbage very neatly, 3 feet wide, 6 feet high, 100 yards down the middle of a county-owned street." Knowing that this would get the attention of the local civic leaders racing from the bluff towns down to their jobs in the gleaming central business district.
Driving
of
through
Louis,
the neighborhood.
Driving through
past
our,
the trash.
The Berlin Wall of garbage brought to you by Miss Davis. And just as we finished the last bag, mysteriously, Channel 7 News showed up. Somebody, we don't know who, we think we know, tipped them off, and there was a wonderful evening news story. University students, local religious leaders, and neighborhood activists break law to save neighborhood. And then they pan down this huge wall of black garbage bags. Uh-huh. The result was a grant from a local foundation. We were able to continue the cleanup. That led to volunteer paint-up, scrape-ups of nearby houses.
Can I just ask what happened to that wall of garbage?
It was taken away within 2 days by the County Department of Public Works to a legal landfill. Uh-huh. And so was all the additional trash that we collected in the same manner. The county decided that if the residents were willing to step up to the plate, they had to support that effort to enforce environmental rules and regulations.
And what was the next step then? What project did you take on with this student neighborhood?
Well, with all the garbage out, one of the ministers came back and said, "You know, now the whole street looks empty. We need to build a playground." So we went down, we designed a standard playground, 23,000 square feet. We presented it to a group of adults. An old reverend, Reverend Earl Dobbins, said, "You know, we need to get play experts involved in this." So he says, "We need kids to really look at these designs." So we came down the following Saturday. We picked up 15 kids in vans. They took us to their three favorite play spaces, an abandoned glass factory, a cemetery, and then finally a suburban school with a drop-dead beautiful playground. We brought them back to Reverend Dobbins' church. We gave them 75 feet of butcher block paper, and we said, "Here, draw your image of the ideal playground you'd like to have." And they created these amazing images in 15 minutes. We then took this mural, hung it up at three local elementary schools a week at each, and gave all the kids at the school little smiling face decals to vote with the elements. And then we took life-size cutouts of the swings, of the flower beds, of all the play structures. And on a Saturday at Reverend Dobbins Church, we invited the kids to work with us in lifting these paper versions mm-hmm. of the elements of the playground and creating the actual physical site plan for the playground. So the Illinois Avenue Playground was built with $16,000 of donated materials from area churches, black contractors, supervising University of Illinois architecture and planning students. Today, when you get married in East St. Louis, that's where you have your wedding pictures taken.
At the playground.
At the playground. And it's been maintained now for 8 years. Following that, the residents that said, "You know, now the houses look pretty bad." And so we then used surplus paint from the university, sort of a bit humorous. Our colors are orange and blue.
Yes.
So we didn't want to use orange even in this holiday, Halloween season. So we tinted the blue a little bit, but it was still rather deep blue. And we painted 30 houses around the playground with neighborhood residents and students helping. It made quite a dramatic physical change. From there, the state treasurer of Illinois said, "Could you use some money? We collect $5 million a year in motor fuels tax. We put it in low-interest local bank accounts." The difference between what the state could negotiate and what the banks are willing to pay, we'll give to your local community organization to do rehab loans.
Now, this is a little different from your earlier effort that resulted in no check. All of a sudden, the state is coming to you and offering?
They called it the float, the difference between what the bank is willing to pay and what the state requires as their minimum interest return. That amount was $75,000 a year. And with that, we were able to purchase the materials so our architecture students would go in and assess a building that was at risk for decline or deterioration in the low-income neighborhood of Emerson Park, determine what the budget would be to rehab it. All the volunteer work would be done by our students under the supervision of black contractors who volunteered their time. The miracle was that in the middle of this, the state announced plans to build a light rail line from St. Louis Lambert Airport through the downtown of St. Louis out to St. Clair County Airport. And the local political leaders had done a route to basically
avoid this neighborhood?
Four very, very poor black neighborhoods, and a route where, mysteriously, many of them just happened to own property, acquired, miraculously, the same month that the route was announced, that these members of the so-called Democratic organization
and
had...
And this was pointed out to various state and city planners, was it?
Indeed. And so the neighbors organized a massive rally, 300 people in the basement of the settlement house, calling for a route to go through the four poorest neighborhoods, supported by research done by our engineering, architecture, planning, and business school at the University of Illinois. We called it the night of the 1001 reasons. It was when the Dalmatian movie came out, why our route is better. So the mayor sat there after four or five reasons. He got up and said, I think I know where this train is going. Do you have a route? It was rerouted through the heart of our neighborhood. The other thing that happened is the light rail line gave East St. Louis's poor families who had no private transportation phenomenal access to living wage jobs out in the belt of manufacturing, warehouse, transportation, and even e-commerce businesses that have sprung up around Lambert Field in Missouri. So now 500 East St. Louis adults commute every morning out to very good jobs out at the airport.
It's wonderful.
And so we see 100 new homes built in East St. Louis in the last 3 years, done by a young black architect who's a graduate of our East St. Louis Action Research Project.
Ken Reardon was one of the founders of the East St. Louis Action Research Project. He now teaches city and regional planning at Cornell University.